spine straightened, millimeter by trembling millimeter, as the tingling darkness began to recede from her vision.
All right, Wolf murmured. I am a famous actress, she whispered back.
She dared not look up at him, afraid it would ruin the spell her imagination had cast. After a moment, his grip loosened. The noise of the crowd behind them faded away, replaced with the calm serenity of bubbling streams and the whisper of bamboo in the palace gardens. Cress stared straight ahead at the looming entrance, flanked by crimson pergolas. Two more courtiers waited at the top of the steps. Wolf produced the two embossed invitations. Cress was perfectly still as the scanner light flickered over the tiny chip that was embedded in the paper. She and Wolf wouldn't have fit the roles of Lynn Audrey and her daughter, but it had been child's play to change the ID profiles coded on each chip. According to the port screen, Wolf was now Mr. Samhain Bristol, Parliament Representative from Toronto, East Canada Province, UK, and she was his young wife. The actual Mr. Bristol was, to Cress's knowledge, still safe at home and unaware that he had a body double negating the political point he was trying to make by not attending the royal wedding. Cress hoped it would stay that way. She released a breath as the courtier returned the invitation to Wolf without a hint of hesitation.
We are so pleased that you could join us after all, Bristol Darren, he said. Please proceed to the ballroom where you will be escorted to your seats.
By the time he finished, he was already reaching for the invitations of the couple behind them. Wolf guided her forward, and if he was sharing any of her anxiety, he didn't show it. The main corridor was lined with palace guards in fine red coats and tasseled epaulets. Cress recognized a painted screen on one wall, mountains standing over misty clouds and a crane-filled lake. Her gaze instinctively flitted up to one of the ornate chandeliers that lined the corridor. And, though it was too small for her to see, she knew that one of the queen's cameras was there, watching them, even now. Though she doubted the queen or Sybil or anyone who could possibly have recognized Cress was bothering to watch the surveillance feeds at that moment, she nevertheless turned her head away and started laughing as if Wolf had made a joke. He frowned at her.
These chandeliers are extraordinary, aren't they? She said, putting as much lightness into her tone as she could.
Wolf's expression remained unfazed, and after a blank moment, he shook his head and resumed his steady pace toward the ballroom. They found themselves on a landing that swooped down a grand staircase and opened up into an enormous, beautiful room. The mere size of it reminded her of the desert's expansiveness, and she was overwhelmed by the same awe and dizziness she'd had before. She was glad they weren't the only ones lingering at the top of the stairs and watching as the crowd drifted in and filled up rows of plush seats beneath them. There was at least an hour before the ceremony would officially begin, and many of the guests were using the time to mingle and take in the beauty of it all. Many pillars throughout the room were carved with gold-tinted dragons, and the walls were filled with so many bouquets of flowers, some as tall as Cress, that it was like the gardens had begun to grow wild inside. Half a dozen birdcages stood beside the floor-to-ceiling windows, displaying doves and mockingbirds and sparrows, which sang a chaotic melody that rivaled the beauty of the orchestra. Cress turned to face Wolf so that, should anyone look at them, it would seem as though they were in deep conversation. He bent his head toward her to complete the masquerade, though his focus was on the nearest guard.
You don't suppose we should mingle, do you?
He screwed up his nose.
I think we'd better not.
Glancing around, he held his elbow toward her.
But perhaps we could go sympathize with some caged birds.
Chapter 48. After passing through the dank cellar, Cinder was glad to discover the escape tunnel was, well, fit for an emperor. The floor was tiled and the walls were smooth concrete, with dim light bulbs set every 20 steps. They could walk without fear of Thorn tripping on jagged rocks. Nevertheless, they were making painfully slow progress, and more than once Cinder considered leaving them behind. Thorn did a decent job of keeping up, but Dr. Erlon's age, combined with his short legs, made his pace feel like an agonizing crawl. If she didn't think it would offend him, she would have offered him a piggyback ride. She kept reminding herself that they had planned for this. They were right on schedule. It would all be fine. She told herself again and again. Eventually, she began to notice signs that they were approaching the palace. Stockrooms filled with non-perishable goods and jugs of water and rice wine. Power generators that sat silent and unused. Large rooms empty but for enormous round tables and uncomfortable-looking chairs, black net screens and switch panels and processors. Not state-of-the-art, but new enough that it was clear these escape tunnels would be ready for use if they were ever needed. Should the royal family ever need to go into hiding, they would be able to stay down here for a long time. And not just the royal family, Cinder realized as they trudged on, passing more stockrooms and hallways that branched in every direction. This was a labyrinth. It seemed that there was enough space for the entire government to come live down here, or at least everyone who worked in the palace. We're almost there, she said, tracking their position through satellite navigation and the map on her retina display.
Wait, where are we going again? It's been so long since we left the ship, I can't remember.
Very funny, Thorn. She glanced back. Thorn was walking with one palm on the wall, and Dr. Erlond was using his cane. She wondered how long it had been since Thorn had given it to him, and how long it had been since the doctor's breathless wheezing had begun in earnest. She'd hardly noticed it, too preoccupied with the plan that filled up her head. Now, seeing beads of sweat on the doctor's brow, dripping down from the brim of his hat, she paused. Are you all right?
Dreamy, he breathed, his head lowered. Just holding on to a comet's tail. Stardust and sand dunes and... Why is it so blasted hot in here?
Cinder rubbed the back of her neck.
Right,
We made good time, she lied. Maybe we should rest for a minute? The doctor shook his head.
No. My crescent moon is up there. We stick to the plan.
Thorn inched toward them, looking equally perplexed.
Isn't it a full moon tonight?
Doctor, you're not having hallucinations, are you? Dr. Erlon narrowed his blue eyes at her.
Go. I'm right behind. I'm better already.
Part of her wanted to argue, but she couldn't deny that there wasn't a whole lot of time to waste, even if he wanted to.
Fine. Thorn?
He shrugged and swung his hand toward her.
Lead the way.
Cinder double-checked the map and moved forward, waiting for one of the corridor offshoots to line up with the instructions Cress had given her. When she spotted a stairwell curling up out of view, she slowed down and checked their location with the palace blueprint.
I think this is it.
Thorn, watch your step. Doctor?
Heartly good, thank you, he said, gripping his side.
Bracing herself, Cinder started to climb. The stairs wrapped upward, the lights from below fading into shadows and, eventually, so much darkness that she turned on her flashlight again. The wall was smooth and undecorated but for a metal handrail. Cinder estimated that she'd trekked up 3 stories worth of steps before she came to a door. It was big enough for 4 people to walk through side by side, made of thick, reinforced steel. As expected, there were no hinges and no handle on this side. A failsafe in case anyone discovered the entrance into the safety tunnel and tried to sneak into the palace. This door was only meant to be opened from the inside. Gripping the handrail, Cinder raised her other fist and tapped out a melody. Then she waited, wondering if she'd been loud enough, wondering if they were too soon, wondering if they were too late and the plan had already fallen apart. But then she heard a noise, a thunking deadbolt, a grinding lock mechanism, the squeak of unused hinges. Aiko stood before her, beaming and holding a pile of neatly folded clothes.
Welcome to New Beijing Palace.
Though he didn't want to admit it out loud, Thorn was sad to be splitting up from Cinder and going forth with only the grumpy, wheezing doctor to act as his guide. So far, he hadn't sensed a whole lot of warmth coming off the old man, who didn't seem to think that fixing Thorn's blindness was a big priority, not to mention the crazy babble he'd been spouting down the tunnels. Nevertheless, here they were, in the palace, heading toward the labs where they would find the equipment necessary to do all the weird pseudoscience optical repair stuff the doctor had talked about. Alone. Just the two of them.
This way, said the doctor,
and Thorn adjusted his direction, keeping one hand on the wall. He missed the cane, but he could hear it clacking up ahead of him, and the doctor seemed to need it more. Thorn really, really hoped the doctor wasn't about to keel over. That would ruin oh so many things about this day.
See anybody? Thorn asked.
Don't ask stupid questions.
Thorn scowled, but kept his mouth shut. It was as they'd hoped. No one would expect a palace break-in from the top-secret escape tunnels. So while all the guard power was being kept at the palace gates and around the ballroom, he and the doctor should have the lab wing all to themselves. At least, until it was time to draw some attention away from Cinder and Cress. The surface of the wall changed beneath his fingers, from a warm, papery texture to something cool and smooth. He heard a door open.
Here, said the doctor. More stairs.
Why not take the elevator?
It's android-operated. Would require an authorized ID chip.
Thorn gripped the handrail and followed the doctor up. And up. The doctor had to stop twice to catch his breath, and Thorn waited, trying to be patient, all the while wondering what Cress was doing. If she would be ready when the time came. He didn't dwell on it. She was with Wolf. She would be fine. Finally, the doctor pushed open another door, a short distance across hard, slick floors, the new hum of lights overhead.
Cozy Lab 6D. This is where I met the princess, you know.
Lab 6D. Right. I've had good success meeting princesses in research labs myself. His nose wrinkled. The room smelled of hospitals. Sterile and cold and medicinal.
There's a lab table about four steps ahead of you. Lie down.
Really? You don't want to take a break, catch your breath?
We don't have time.
Gulping, Thorn inched forward until his hand smacked a padded table. He sought out the edge before lifting himself onto it. Tissue paper crinkled beneath him.
But isn't this the part where you shove sharp objects into my pelvic bone? Maybe we don't want to rush.
Are you nervous?
Yes, terribly so, yes.
The doctor snorted.
Just like you. To finally show a bit of humanity beneath the arrogance. And of course, it's only a concern for yourself. I'm hardly surprised.
Wouldn't you be a little concerned in this situation? My eyesight? My pelvis?
My country? My princess? My daughter?
What daughter? What are you even talking about?
The doctor harumphed, and Thorn could hear him banging through drawers.
I suppose your eyesight was lost while attempting to rescue Crescent from that satellite. For that alone, I suppose I do owe you.
Thorn scratched his cheek.
I suppose you do?
Did she tell you, by chance, how long she'd been imprisoned?
Cress? 7 years in the satellite.
7 years?
Yeah. Before that, I guess she was kept with a bunch of other shells in some volcanic dormitories or something. I don't remember. That thaumaturge had been collecting blood samples from them, but Cress didn't seem to know why. A cabinet door slammed shut, followed by silence.
Doctor? Collecting blood samples? From shells.
Weird, right? But at least she wasn't subjected to any bizarre genetic tampering like Wolf. Thorn shook his head.
I'm not sure about those lunar scientists. They seem to be doing a lot of crazy stuff up there.
Another silence, before more rustling. Thorn heard a chair or a table being wheeled toward him.
They must have been using shell blood to develop the antidote, the doctor mused.
But the timing doesn't make sense. She was taken before Letamosis even broke out here on Earth, before it was known to exist.
Thorn tilted his ear toward the doctor as his rambling faded off.
What now?
Unless,
what now?
Oh, stars. That's why they wanted them. The poor children. My poor sweet crescent moon.
Thorn settled his chin on his palm.
Never mind. You finish your nonsensical ramblings and let me know when you're ready to proceed.
Another rumble of wheels on the hard floor.
You do not deserve her, you know,
the doctor said, with a new edge to his tone.
I'm sure I... Wait. What?
I hope she comes to her senses soon, because I see how she looks at you, and I do not care for it. Not one bit.
Who are we talking about?
Something clattered as the doctor dropped what Thorn assumed were medical tools onto a metal tray.
It doesn't matter now. Lie down.
Pause 1 second. And be honest. Thorn held up a finger. Are you having a mental breakdown right now?
The doctor huffed.
Carswell Thorn, I may have just made a very important discovery that must be shared with Emperor Kaito and the other Earthen leaders immediately. But that cannot happen until we have finished with this whole charade. Now, by my estimation, we have fewer than 5 minutes to extract the needed stem cells and divide them for the regeneration solution. I may not like you, but I am aware that we are on the same side, and we are both invested in seeing Kress and Cinder leave this palace today alive. Now, are you going to trust me or not?
Thorn considered the question for probably longer than the doctor wanted him to, before he sighed and lay back on the table.
Ready when you are. But first, don't forget to...
I haven't forgotten. Activating Letamosis outbreak alarm. Now.
Thorn heard the soft pad of fingertips on a net screen, and then a blaring siren screamed through the halls.
Chapter 49.
Kress was getting antsy. The royal nuptials were slated to begin in a mere 27 minutes, and as far as she could tell, all guards and security personnel were still very much at their stations. On top of that, she and Wolf were running out of ways to make themselves inconspicuous without having to relocate their seats. So far, they'd each nibbled at the prawn hors d'oeuvres being waiter passed. Kress 1, Wolf 6, taken turns excusing themselves to pretend to use the washroom while really trying to discern if any of the guards appeared concerned about a potential security breach, and 3 times Kress had had to laugh dreamily and hold Wolf's hand in order to get some loitering female admirer to mosey on. It was the most impressive acting she'd ever done, because touching Wolf made her uneasy, and it was difficult to imagine him making any jokes.
Maybe we should start thinking of a plan B,
Kress murmured when she noticed that the symphony had begun replaying their set.
Already done, said Wolf.
She peered up at him.
Really? What is it?
We continue on to the security center as planned. I just have to knock out a lot more guards between here and there.
She chewed on her lip. Not terribly enthusiastic with Plan B. Then,
there, look.
She followed his gesture. 2 guards were speaking with their heads lowered. 1 had badges indicating a significantly higher rank. He pointed down a corridor in the direction of the research wing.
Well, it was really in the direction of just about anything, but Kress hoped he was talking about a disturbance in the research wing.
That would mean that the others had made it inside and raised the alarms. 2 later, the 2 guards left the ballroom.
Do you think they've done it? Kress said.
Time to find out.
Wolf offered her his elbow, and together they meandered out into the main corridor. The remaining guards paid them no attention as they turned down a connecting hallway. Kress kept repeating the instructions that she'd memorized. Take the 4th hallway on the right, past the courtyard with the tortoise fountain, then the 2nd left. Her heart began to pound fervently in her chest. Twice, they were stopped by palace staff, and twice, they asked for directions like confused, slightly drunk wedding guests, and had to backtrack to a safe hiding place before Wolf deemed it safe to move again. But no alarm was raised, and no guards came for them. Cress knew they had already been captured on countless cameras set through the palace, but she and Wolf wouldn't be recognizable like Cinder or Thorn or Dr. Erland, and even if they did raise suspicions, she hoped everyone would be too distracted by the emergency in the research labs to care. Still, the farther they got from the ballroom, the less likely it was that anyone would buy their innocence act. She was grateful when Wolf's pace picked up. Cinder and Iko would be waiting on them now, and they were running out of time. They reached a sky bridge that locked together two of the palace's towers. The glass floor showed a peaceful stream bubbling underneath, amid lush grasses and heavy-headed chrysanthemums. Past the bridge, they found themselves in a circular lobby, with empty seating arrangements carved from dark wood, statues of mythical creatures circling the perimeter, and a jungle of potted bamboos and orchids giving the room a heady scent. Recognizing the space, Cress marched to a 3-foot carving of a luck dragon and spun it around on its pedestal to face the wall. "Lunar camera in the left eye," she explained, then hurried toward the elevators. A white android stood in the center of the elevator bank, with its pronged grippers folded in front of its abdomen. It flashed a blue sensor over them. "I apologize for the inconvenience," it said in a perfect monotone meant to convey a diplomatic lack of bias. "We are experiencing a level 1 security breach and all elevators have been temporarily shut down. Please enjoy a hot cup of tea while we wait for clearance." One of its prongs gestured to an alcove where a machine held a fine porcelain teapot, steaming at its spout, and an assortment of leaves and spices. "Do you have security override capabilities?" Cress asked the android. "I do, but only an official code or..." Cress crouched down and swiveled the android away from her. "Don't suppose you have a screwdriver or something we can use to open the control panel?" "A palace official with sufficient clearance." Wolf stooped over her, dug his fingernails into the groove, and snapped the whole panel off in his fist. "Could override a level 1 security breach. I apologize for the continued inconvenience, but I have to ask that you..." Wolf pulled the port screen that the doctor had given him out of his pocket and passed it to Cress. She yanked out a connector cable and plugged it into the android, stopping the automatic diagnostic scan before it could begin. She began a manual search for the security override settings. "Stop tampering with official government property. Tampering with a royal android could result in a fine of up to 5,000 univs and 6 months of..." "Identity confirmed. Royal advisor Con Torin. Security override complete. Awaiting instructions." "Elevator to main floor," said Cress. "Proceed to elevator A." Cress ejected the cable. Wolf pulled her to her feet as the nearest doors opened and tugged her inside. Her heart was thumping as the elevator descended. She imagined those doors opening again onto an army of guards, their guns aimed and ready. She figured that by now, they were no doubt being watched. Thorn's distraction could only count for so much, and there were 2 cameras in each elevator in the palace. The only question was how long it would take any guards to reach them once they figured out where they were heading. The elevator came to a stop. The doors hesitated for too long, and her pulse fluttered wildly until they opened onto an empty hallway. She released a long-held breath. This floor of the palace was mostly business space, used for diplomatic meetings and the offices of a multitude of government officials. She recognized bits and pieces of it. The name plaque on that desk, the painting on that wall. In her head, Cress was back in her satellite, even as she and Wolf jogged through the carpeted corridor. She was seeing Wolf and herself through the cameras along the ceilings. She was picturing how the two of them would have looked to her from up there, always disconnected and uninvolved and watching. Watching. As they rounded a corner, she imagined herself clicking to another feed. As they passed one camera, she pictured it changing from their front view to their backs. They reached the next elevator bank without issue, though this one had no watchful android. She tapped the elevator key, but it remained blank. The words, "Elevators temporarily down due to level 1 breach," were scrolled across its screen in red text. Cress scowled and dug her fingernails around the frame. Surely there was a way to get clearance in the event that someone important enough needed to get past, but without a designated android. She was grabbed by the elbow and hauled back. She yelped, thinking for a moment a guard had captured her, but it was only Wolf pulling her toward an alcove. "Stairs," he said, yanking open a door. As it shut behind them, Cress heard the sounds of boots clomping in the distance. Her heart leaped into her throat, and she glanced at Wolf to see if he'd heard. But before she could speak, he swept her over one shoulder and was jumping over the stairs, leaping down to the landing in a single bound. She squealed, but then clamped her hand over her mouth to rein in her sudden terror. Down, down, down. Finally, they passed a plaque labeled Sublevel D, Maintenance/Security. This time, when Wolf set her down and pushed open the door, it felt as if they were no longer inside the palace at all. The walls were plain white, the floors dull concrete gray. The stairwell had spilled them into a small lobby, with the elevator off to their left and a cluttered desk in front of them. Behind the desk was a room fully enclosed in tinted glass, where an empty chair sat before a bank of 3 dozen screens showing security footage within the palace and the surrounding property. 4 of the screens were flashing security breach warnings. And then there was the guard, aiming a gun at them.
"Stay where you are. Put your hands where I can see them."
Cress shakily moved to follow his command, but before her fingertips could even brush her hair, Wolf had shoved her out of the way. She cried out and fell to the ground. Her dress ripped somewhere in the lining, and a gunshot echoed off the concrete. She screamed and covered her head.
"Cress, get up, now!"
Pulling her arms away, she saw that the guard was unconscious and slumped against his desk. Bending down, Wolf kicked the gun away, then slid the guard toward the glass door and held his wrist over the ID scanner. A light flickered green.
"Come on, there were more guards right behind us."
Trembling, Cress pushed herself off the floor and followed Wolf into the security control room. Chapter 50.
"Am I wearing this right?" Cinder said, fidgeting with the belted wraparound blouse that had 3 different ties that were supposed to lace together in some mysterious fashion.
"Yes, it's fine," said Aiko. "Would you stop moving your head?"
She slapped her hands on Cinder's ears to hold her head still. Cinder shifted from foot to foot, trying to calm her racing thoughts while Aiko twisted her hair into a pinching bun that made her scalp throb. It seemed as if it had been hours since Thorne and Dr. Erland had left them, though the clock counting the seconds in her head claimed it had been less than 17 minutes. In one corner of her vision was a news feed hosting its own countdown. The countdown to the start of the royal wedding. Cinder shut her eyes and tried to will away another bout of nausea. She'd never been so nervous in her entire life. And it wasn't just the waiting, or the knowledge that so many things could go wrong, or the terror that she could be caught and returned to prison at any minute. What really terrified her, what really made her nerves hum, was knowing that she was going to see Kai again, face to face, looking into his eyes for the first time since she'd fallen in the palace gardens. At the time, his expression was so filled with shock and betrayal, her heart had split in two, especially when not an hour before she had stood dripping wet at the top of the ballroom stairs and Kai had looked up at her and smiled. Smiled. The two expressions could not have been more different. And they'd both been directed at her. She didn't know what to expect when he saw her now, and the uncertainty was terrifying.
"Cinder, are you watching the news?"
She refocused on the news broadcaster who was reporting word of a temporary delay to the ceremony. They were being told that all was well and the ceremony would begin shortly, but that the security team was taking extra precautions.
"That's it. Let's go."
only once they peered down the service corridor in each direction, confirming both that no one was around and that the pale lights on the nearest ceiling cameras were off, did Cinder begin to appreciate the extent of her vulnerability. She was the most wanted criminal in the world, returning to the scene of her crime. But there was no changing her mind now. She sent the news broadcast away, pulling the palace blueprint over her vision instead. "Locating now," she said, using her internal positioning system to mark where she and Aiko stood, before inputting the tracker code for Emperor Kai that Kress had given them. She held her breath while it searched, and searched. And then, there he was, a green dot in the North Tower, 14th floor, the sitting room connected to his personal chambers. He was pacing. She shivered. She was so close to him, after being a galaxy apart. Got him. She kept to hallways that she expected to be unoccupied. She found herself continuously glancing at the cameras on the ceilings, but not one of them moved or flashed or indicated that it was turned on, and slowly, Cinder's paranoia began to fade. Kress had done it. She'd shut down the security system. Then they rounded a corner into the elevator bank of the North Tower, and Cinder crashed into a woman. She stumbled back. "Oh, sorry." The woman eyed Cinder. She was a member of the staff, dressed in the same blush-toned top and black pants that they were. Cinder called up her glamour, turning her cyborg hand into a human one and giving her complexion the same flawless tone as an escort's. She flashed a smile that she hoped hid her surprise and bowed. It took a few heartbeats more to realize why she was so startled. Not because they'd run into someone here in the hallway, but because she hadn't sensed this woman around the corner. It was a feeling so subtle, she'd hardly known she was doing it before, reaching out with her consciousness and lightly touching on the bioelectricity that shimmered off every human being. She'd gotten used to feeling Thorne and Wolf and Jason and Dr. Erland when they were nearby, their presence like a shadow in her subconscious. It was instinctual, no more difficult than breathing. But this woman was a blank slate to her. Like Kress, a shell. Like Aiko. "My apologies," said the woman, returning Cinder's bow. "This wing of the palace is off limits to anyone without a crown-issued pass. I must ask you to leave."
"We have a pass," said Aiko, smiling brightly. "We've been asked to check with His Imperial Majesty to see if he requires any refreshments while we wait for the ceremony to begin."
She made to step around the woman, but a palm shot out and pressed against her sternum. The woman's serene gaze, though, remained on Cinder.
"You are Lynn Cinder," she said. "You are a wanted fugitive. I am required to alert authorities."
Sorry, but this is a bad time for me."
Stepping back, Cinder raised her prosthetic hand and fired a tranquilizer dart at the woman's thigh. It clanged, the tip catching briefly in the fabric of her pants before it fell to the floor. That was all the confirmation she needed. Cinder clenched her jaw and swung for the side of the woman's head, but the woman ducked and whipped a leg up, her foot catching Cinder in the side. She grunted and stumbled away, her back crashing into a wall. With an impassive expression, the woman leaped after her, aiming an elbow for Cinder's nose. Cinder barely blocked, using the momentum to spin around, locking her elbow around the woman's neck. The woman bucked her hips, sending Cinder tumbling over her head. She landed on her back, her vision spotty.
"Aiko, she's a—"
She heard a click, and the fighting stalled around her. Cinder moaned.
"An android."
"I noticed," said Aiko, holding up a control panel studded with snapped wires.
"Are you all right?"
Aiko crouched beside Cinder, her expression a perfect model of concern. Though she was still panting, Cinder found herself smiling. "You're the most human android I've ever known."
"I know."
Aiko scooped a hand beneath Cinder and helped her sit up.
"Your hair is a mess, by the way. Honestly, Cinder, can't you look presentable for more than 5 minutes?" Cinder braced herself on Aiko and climbed to her feet.
I'm a mechanic, she said, an automatic response.
She glanced at the woman whose arms had fallen limp at her sides and whose eyes were staring emptily toward the elevators. Shaking her head to clear it, Cinder tapped the elevator call button. The screen flashed twice with a warning about a level one security breach before turning green. The nearest elevator opened. Somewhere, many floors underneath the palace, Cress had just given her clearance. Together, she and Aiko dragged the android into the elevator and left her in a corner. Cinder's hands were shaking so hard with adrenaline she almost pushed the button for the wrong floor. As the door shut, she pulled the last few bobby pins out of her hair and instead whipped it into a quick, messy ponytail.
5 minutes of being presentable had been plenty enough.
In her head, she narrowed her focus down to those two separate dots merging ever closer. Herself gliding up between the tower floors, and Kai. Something was wrong. Thaumaturge Sybil Mira could sense it in the way the earthen guards were acting, and how there were too many whispers and hands resting on gun hilts. As she followed behind Queen Lavanna, Sybil found herself growing tense. Her queen would not be happy should anything go wrong. She glanced sideways at Thaumaturge Amory. His eyes met hers. He'd noticed it too. She looked ahead to her queen, who was wearing red and gold, traditional Commonwealth wedding colors. Her head was draped in a sheer veil, and the long train of her gown had been embroidered with the ornate tails of the dragon and phoenix motif that converged in the front. The fabric billowed like a sail as she walked. Her posture suggested poise and confidence, as it always did. Had she noticed anything yet? Even if she had, she may only attribute it to her presence and how the weak earthens would simultaneously ogle and cower from her. But Sybil knew it was more than that. The hair prickled on her neck. They were nearly to the main corridor when a guard stepped in front of their escorts. Her Majesty came to a stop, her skirt settling at her feet. Amory stopped as well, but Sybil continued forward to place herself at Her Majesty's side, taking care not to favor her uninjured leg. She may have been forced to tell the queen about her failure in capturing Lynn Cinder, but she'd so far managed to avoid the embarrassing fact that she was shot during the fight, by her own guard, no less.
My sincerest apologies, Your Majesty, the earthen guard began with a quick bow.
Sybil glowered, and with a twitch of her fingers, the guard dropped to one knee. He grunted.
You will show my queen proper respect when addressing her, Sybil said, slipping her hands into her sleeves.
It took a moment for the guard to recover from his shock. She did not allow him to stand or even raise his head from its lowered, respectful position, and finally he cleared his throat and proceeded, his voice more strained than before.
Your Majesty, we are experiencing an unanticipated malfunction of our security systems. We've determined that for your safety and the safety of Emperor Kaito, we must delay the ceremony.
He paused to inhale.
We are optimistic that the delay will be short, however, I'm afraid I must ask you to return to your quarters. We will inform you immediately once this matter is cleared and we can proceed with the ceremony.
A drop of sweat traced down his neck.
Your escorts will happily return you to...
What sort of malfunction? Asked the queen.
I'm afraid I can't divulge any details at this point, but we are working to correct the...
That is not an acceptable answer to my queen's reasonable question, said Sybil. You have suggested that my queen may be in danger. I demand to know what details you have of the situation, so that I may personally see to her safety. We will not be kept ignorant on these matters. Now, what sort of malfunction are you experiencing?
She could see his jaw flexing, his eyes fixed on the ground before the queen's feet. Sybil doubted he was high-ranking enough to answer the question, but his fear was working against his resolve. The two lower-ranked guards that had accompanied him didn't move or fidget, and yet
Their rigid posture hinted at their own discomfort. Perhaps she should prostrate them all.
"A manual one," the guard said finally. "Our security system has been shut down, which can only be done at the central control room."
"And that is within the palace?"
"Yes, Thaumaturge Mira."
"You're telling me that your malfunction is truly a security breach?"
"It is a possibility we are considering. Our number one priority is the safety of our guests. Again, I must ask that you return to your quarters, Your Majesty."
Sybil laughed. "The palace may have been infiltrated. You can't keep someone away from your own security mainframe, and yet you think we'll be safe in the guest quarters?"
"That's enough, Sybil."
Sybil froze and glanced at her queen. Her long, pale fingers were interlaced over her skirt, but Sybil guessed that beneath the veil, her eyes would be sharp as needles.
"My queen."
"I am sure these men are well aware of the importance of this wedding ceremony, and the global repercussions that could follow should anything prevent this marriage from taking place. Aren't you, gentlemen?"
The guard said nothing. The kneeling man was beginning to tremble. Sybil could guess that his neck was aching from holding his head at such an awkward position. Two steps clicked on the floor to Her Majesty's other side.
"My queen asked you a question," said Amory,
his voice both calm and menacing, like the roll of distant thunder. The guard cleared his throat.
"We have no desire to delay or prevent this wedding, Your Majesty. We only wish to resolve the problem swiftly so that the ceremony can continue as soon as possible."
"See that you do," said the queen. "Sybil, Amory, let us return to our chambers and allow these men to fulfill their responsibilities without toiling over us." She began to turn before pausing. Her veil swished past her elbows.
"Please, do send word immediately as to the safety of my groom. I will be in fits until I know he is well."
"Yes, Your Majesty," said the guard. "We will be instating extra protection outside your chambers, as well as His Majesty's, until this is resolved."
Sybil waited until they were pacing away, following behind their escorts and guards, before she released her hold on the man. She wondered if those guards had any imagination for the wrath they would incur if this interruption wasn't resolved. The delay itself, though, was not what made Sybil anxious. It was what, or who, could have caused such a delay. Though Lavanna refused to even speak about the escaped cyborg, other than to rail about the inadequacies of the earthen military, Sybil had deduced what her queen would not say outright. It had been easy to extract her hostage's implications during the interrogation, and the red-headed girl had not been lying. Lynn Cinder, the cyborg, was truly Princess Selene. Sybil had seen the girl's glamour at the ball. More telling, she had seen Her Majesty's reaction to it. Her lost niece was the only person in the galaxy who could have caused such an uproar. And the idea that Princess Selene was out there, evading her, taunting her, would be driving the queen mad. So far, the girl had proven herself to be remarkably resourceful, escaping from New Beijing, evading authorities in both Paris and that little African village, even managing to get away from her. Could it be that she was behind this? Would she be so reckless as to try to stop the queen's wedding? If so, perhaps Sybil had not been giving her enough credit. A palace breach, a security malfunction, a disabled sys... She almost missed a step. She was not one for clumsiness, and Amory noticed. She didn't return his stare. Her thoughts were already racing. It was not possible. She was jumping to conclusions. She reached into her sleeve for the miniature port screen that lived in its own small pocket and pulled up the surveillance feed for New Beijing Palace. All the cameras and trackers she'd painstakingly installed throughout the palace over countless dreary diplomatic meetings and discussions. Unable to establish link,
She gnashed her teeth. Not only had the palace's security been tampered with, their own surveillance system was down. The entire system. It didn't seem possible, but she knew Crescent's work when she saw it. She tucked the port away. My queen. The group halted. I would like to request permission to investigate the security breach myself. One of the guards fidgeted.
I do apologize, but we've been ordered to return all of you to...
Sybil twisted the bioelectricity around his head, and the guard fell silent with a strangled gasp.
I was not asking your permission.
After a moment, Lavanna gave a single nod, the curtain of material barely shifting. Granted. She bowed.
And Sybil, should you find these perpetrators? I order their immediate deaths. I cannot be bothered with trivial arrests and trials on my wedding day.
Of course, my queen.
Chapter 51. Kai laughed, a rough sound that bordered on hyperventilating. He couldn't tell if this unexpected turn of events was terrible or very, very funny. The palace security has been compromised? What exactly does that mean?
The Royal Guard hasn't had time to document an official report, Your Majesty, said Torin. But we do know that all security cameras and scanners, including weapon scanners, have malfunctioned. Or at least, that your guards are unable to access their feeds at this time.
How long have they been shut down?
Almost 11 minutes.
Kai paced to the window. He caught sight of a groom in his reflection. A white silk shirt split by a red sash that hung from his shoulder. It made him think of blood every time he saw it. He'd spent the past hour pacing around his private chambers and avoiding his reflection as much as possible. Do you think Lavanna has anything to do with it?
It seems out of character for her to do anything that could upset today's ceremony.
Kai strung his fingers through his hair. Priya would have a fit when she saw him, after those specialty stylists had spent 40 minutes adjusting every last hair on his head.
Your Majesty, I might ask that you move away from the window.
He turned around, surprised at the concern in Torin's voice.
Why? We have to assume that this breach constitutes a threat to your safety, but we can't guess where that threat might come from.
You think someone's going to try and assassinate me through a window on the 14th floor?
We don't know what to think, but I don't want to take unnecessary risks until we have more information. The captain of the guard should be here shortly. I'm sure he has a plan in place for such circumstances. We may be forced to evacuate or go into lockdown mode.
Kai drew away from the window. Lockdown mode? He hadn't known such a thing existed. Are we canceling the ceremony? He asked, hardly daring to hope. Torin sighed.
Not officially, not yet. That course of action is a last resort. Queen Lavanna and her court have been confined to their quarters and, if necessary, will be escorted to a remote location. The ceremony is temporarily delayed until we can ensure your safety and the safety of the queen.
Kai briefly perched on the edge of one of the carved wood chairs, but, too anxious to sit, bounced back to his feet and resumed pacing.
She's going to be furious. You might want to warn whoever has to break the news to her. I suspect everyone is well aware.
Kai shook his head, baffled. For weeks, he'd lived in a mental fog, caught between misery and apprehension, fear and nerves, and the constant desperate hopes that lingered in his head. Hope that there was a way out. Hope that the wedding day would never come. Hope that Princess Celine had been found and that, somehow, she would change everything. And now, this. There was no way it was a coincidence. Someone had purposefully hacked the palace security system. Who was capable of that? And what did they want to do? Simply stop the wedding? There were plenty of people in the world who didn't want this wedding to take place, after all. Or were their motivations more dangerous? Maybe even sinister? He peered up at Torin.
I know you don't like it when I talk about conspiracies, but
come on!
Torin exhaled a long, painful-sounding breath.
Your Majesty, this time, we may be in agreement.
Someone knocked, startling them both. Normally, a speaker in the wall would have announced the arrival of whoever was on the other side. But that must have been a part of the failed system. Which made Kai question, shouldn't there have been a backup system? Or had that too been compromised?
Torin moved toward the door first.
Announce yourself.
Tajmi Priya, requesting to speak with His Majesty.
Kai massaged his neck as Torin unbolted and opened the door. Priya stood stiffly before them, even more put together than usual in an emerald and silver sari.
Any news? Asked Kai.
Priya's expression was dazed, bordering on fearful. Kai braced himself for the worst, although he didn't know what the worst could be. But instead of speaking, Priya shut her eyes and collapsed, crumpling onto the carpet. Kai gasped and dropped down beside her. On her other side, Torin lifted her wrist, checking for a pulse.
What's wrong with her?
Kai asked, before his eyes snagged on a small dart jutting from Priya's back.
What?
She'll be fine. Kai froze, looked up at black pants and a silk top and Cinder. His heart lurched into his throat. She wore the same uniform as the wedding staff. Her hair was a mess, as it always was. She wasn't wearing gloves. She looked flustered. Another girl entered behind her and shut the door. She was a little taller, with light brown skin and blue hair, though Kai couldn't spare her more than a cursory glance. Because Cinder was there.
Cinder.
Unable to lift his jaw, Kai pushed himself to his feet. Torin stood too and stepped around Priya, trying to inch his way in between them like a shield, but Kai hardly noticed. Cinder held his gaze. It seemed as if maybe she was waiting for something, bracing herself. Despite the fact that her metal hand had some sort of dangerous-looking appendage jutting from one of the fingers, she looked almost bashful. The silence was unbearable, but Kai couldn't think of a single thing to say. Finally, Cinder gulped.
I'm sorry. I had to. She gestured at the unconscious wedding coordinator, then waved her hand like shaking it off. But she'll be fine, I swear. Maybe a little nauseous when she comes to, but otherwise. And your android? Nancy, right? I had to disable her. And her backup processor. But any mechanic can return her to defaults in about 6 seconds, so.
She rubbed anxiously at her wrist.
Oh, and we ran into your captain of the guard in the hallway, and a few other guards, and I may have scared him, and he's, unconscious also. But really, they'll all be just fine, I swear.
Her lips twitched into a brief, nervous smile.
Hello again, by the way.
Ugh, said the other girl, rolling her eyes. That was painful.
Cinder shot her a glare, but then the girl took a single step toward Kai and dipped into a graceful bow.
Your Imperial Majesty, it is such a pleasure to see you again.
He said nothing. Cinder said nothing. Torin, half positioned between Kai and Cinder, said nothing. Finally, the girl lifted her head.
Any time now, Cinder?
Cinder jumped. Right, sorry. She took a tentative step forward and looked about to speak again, but Kai finally found his voice.
Are you insane?
Cinder paused.
Are you? Queen Lavanna is in this palace. She'll kill you.
She blinked. Yes, I know.
Which is why we need to stop wasting time, the girl muttered under her breath.
Kai frowned at her.
Who are you? She brightened.
Oh, I'm Aiko. You may not remember me, but we met at the market that day you brought in the android. Only I was about this tall, she held her hand at hip height, and shaped kind of like an enormous pear and significantly more pale.
She batted her eyelashes. Kai returned his attention to Cinder. She's right, said Cinder. We need to leave now, and you're coming with us.
I'm what?
He will do no such thing, said Torin.
He started to move towards Cinder, but then his foot stalled midair and reversed. Suddenly, he was stepping over Priya, walking backward until the backs of his knees hit a settee, and he sank down onto the cushion. Kai gaped at him, beginning to think this was all some bizarre anxiety dream.
I'm sorry, said Cinder, holding up her cyborg hand. But I have one more tranquilizer, and if you try to interfere, I'm afraid I'll have to use it on you.
Torin glared at her, putting as much seething hatred into the look as Kai had ever seen. Kai, I need to remove your ID chip. He faced her again and felt, for the first time, a twinge of fear. Something clicked, and he glanced down to see her ejecting a short knife from one of her fingers. She was cyborg. This he'd almost gotten used to. But she was also lunar, and while he'd known that for just as long, he'd never before seen her act lunar. Not so blatantly, not until now. Cinder took a step toward him. He took a step back. She paused, hurt flickering in her eyes.
Kai?
You shouldn't have come back here.
She licked her lips.
I know how this must look, but I'm asking you to trust me. I can't let you marry her.
He let out an abrupt laugh. The wedding. He'd almost forgotten about it, and he was the one in groom's clothes.
It's not your decision to make.
I'm making it anyway. She moved forward again, and with another step back, Kai found himself pressed against a small table. Cinder's gaze dipped down and her eyes widened. Kai followed the look. Her foot was on the table. The child-sized foot that had fallen off on the garden steps. Its plating dented and the joints packed with dirt. He'd taken it out of his office when the security team had done the sweep for Lavanna's spy equipment. His ears grew hot, and he felt as if he'd just been caught hoarding something strange and overtly intimate. Something that didn't belong to him.
He gestured half-heartedly. You dropped that.
Cinder peeled her attention away from the foot and met his gaze, speechless. He couldn't begin to guess what she was thinking.
He didn't even know what it meant that he'd kept it.
The other girl, Aiko, cupped her chin with both hands.
This is so much better than a net drama.
Cinder briefly lowered her gaze to compose herself, then held her hand toward him.
Please, Kai, we don't have much time. I need your wrist.
Her voice was gentle and kind, and somehow that gave him greater pause than anything. Lunars, always so convincingly gentle, so deviously kind. Shaking his head, he pressed his vulnerable wrist against his side.
Cinder, look. I don't know what you're doing here. I want to believe you have good intentions, but I don't know anything about you. You lied to me about everything.
I never lied to you. Cinder stole another look at the foot.
I maybe didn't tell you the whole truth, but can you blame me?
He frowned. Of course I can blame you. You had plenty of opportunities to tell me the truth. The words seemed to surprise her until she fisted her hands on her hips.
Right. And what if I'd said, oh, sure, your highness, I'd love to go to the ball with you, but first, you should probably know that I'm cyborg.
And then what? Kai looked away. You never would have talked to me again, she answered for him. You would have been mortified.
So you were just going to keep it hidden forever?
Forever? Cinder waved her arm toward the window.
You are the emperor of an entire country. There was never going to be a forever.
He was surprised how much the word stung. She was right. There wasn't room for such absurdity between them. An emperor? A cyborg? Her words shouldn't have hurt at all.
What about being lunar? He said. When was that going to come up?
Cinder huffed, and he could tell she was growing exasperated.
We don't have time for this. How many times did you manipulate me? How much of it was just